Hi. Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 134. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
It's a real light week, so which is funny because last week I had like 8 billion movies I had seen. I haven't seen much. Chris has seen nothing.
No.
Nothing.
I'll just talk about two things I've seen briefly, and then we're going to just kind of rattle off a list of our favorite movies from the 2010s. So I'll just start off with what I saw. Like, there is a new documentary on Netflix called Icarus. And to avoid rambling on, I'll just read what the synopsis is on Netflix.
Okay.
When documentarian Brian Fogel begins to investigate doping in the sports world, he comes into contact with a Russian scientist involved in his nation's anti-doping program, and the two soon uncover the largest scandal in sports history. It basically starts off with this guy, this documentary filmmaker, trying to replicate Lance Armstrong's dope regimen. Like, which is fucking crazy, like taking all these steroids and shit and like trying to basically do what Lance Armstrong did. And in order to do so, he gets help from this guy from Russia who was in charge of anti-doping for their Olympics. And this guy like is just telling him like what steroids to take and whatnot. And then you start to learn more about the guy, and it goes kind of insane places. Like, I don't really want to spoil it in case you or anybody is interested in watching it, but it, like, has, like, very large implications for Russia, especially. It's also kind of a timely documentary because Vladimir Putin's a big part of it. So,
he's a big part of our world right now. So,
yeah, unfortunately. You get to see it kind of just shows how corrupt his government is. And looking at it from kind of a more benign angle of the Olympics. But, I mean, if he's willing to go the places he goes for the Olympics, like, he's not a good guy. I guess I'll just leave it at that. I mean, I guess you can imagine places that the documentary goes. It's pretty good. Like, it's a documentary that definitely is kind of held up by its subject matter. Like, just the fact that this is a real story is crazy. It's definitely worth watching, I'd say. So that's brand new on Netflix. I'd give it four. It 4 stars just, again, because, like, it's just, it's something that's worth watching to know about. It's fucking nuts. The only other really thing I saw this week is an old movie from, I want to say, 1981 called Body Heat.
Okay.
Let me pull it up here real quick. I want to say it is written and directed by Lawrence Kasdan.
Yes.
Have you ever seen Body Heat?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So, like, it's basically him doing an homage to film noir and updating it for a modern audience. You know, this, you know, the modern audience of 1981. It's a guy meets a woman who is married. They start having sex, and then they decide that they're going to kill her rich husband and run away with all the money and live happily ever after. The guy is played by William Hurt. The girl is played by Kathleen Turner, who I believe was like a newcomer at the time. She's really good in it. It, you know, she's the femme fatale, and if you're familiar with film noir, you know exactly where this movie is going. But there's a couple little twists that, you know, basically I had a general idea where it was going to go for sure right from the beginning, but there's little nuances and little details that were fun. It's a solid, like, if you're into film noir, this is definitely like a solid solid watch. So it's definitely, you know, worth checking out if you are into that genre or if you're just a film person. And even just in general, it's a pretty entertaining movie. It actually holds up pretty well. Does not feel dated. And beyond the central players, you do have, in very, very minor supporting roles, some people who would go on to become bigger stars. You have Mickey Rourke in this season for like a scene or two. You have Ted Danson, who I don't know how I did not recognize it was him till like halfway through the movie. Yeah, it's solid all around. It's like definitely worth watching. The only, I guess, you know, I'll say I'd give it a very solid 4 stars. One little like nitpick or thing that I thought was really funny is when he's first like coming on to this girl, she finally like lets her come back to his house and kiss her, and she's like, "I think you should go now." And he leaves, and he's like standing on her front porch, and then he just grabs a fucking chair or something and throws it through her fucking like a sliding glass door type thing, or just a glass door, and walks back into the house, like just fucking smashes into her house, walks back up to her and starts kissing her, and she's like, "Oh yeah, let's fuck." Like, I don't know why, I just thought that was fucking hilarious, super over the top. Like, if I were her, I would be worried about my fucking door being broken more than having sex. But I mean, other than that, I mean, I thought that was goofy. But in general, Body Heat's a good one. It's worth checking out if you could find it, Chris.
Okay.
So I'll do it. Like we, yeah, like I said, you did not see much, but we're kind of goofing around on Twitter, talking about what are some of the best films of the 2010s. We ended up coming up with a list. It's definitely not super thorough. I was going more for like what are the really, really great, like, great movies that are not going to be forgotten that we've watched probably several times. And we came up with a list. It's not a set like number. It's not an order. I'll try to go through it kind of chronologically. So start right off with 2010.
Yeah.
Chris, you suggested Tangled, which I have not seen, so I can't really speak to it. But why did you... Why?
Everybody kind of, like, remembers Frozen from a few years ago.
Yeah.
But I really think Tangled is the movie that kind of kicked off that, like, Disney animated studio renaissance that they seem to be experiencing there. Tangled is, it's a traditional Disney princess movie. Maybe it's not traditional, like, because Rapunzel is not the damsel in distress. She is very capable of handling herself. So maybe it's like a twist on, you know, the traditional Disney princess movie. But it's super well animated. Characters are great. Voice acting is fantastic. And the music, which is written by the same people who wrote Frozen, is exceptionally well done. So it's one of the more watchable over and over again animated movies of the past, like, 10 years. So...
Yeah, really good. Like I said, I have not seen it, but it sounds like it kind of laid the blueprint for what Frozen did.
Yeah.
And then, also,
and then Moana followed up behind it, where, you know, they've definitely taken a turn where for a while it was like the princes were always the ones to save the... then I mean, Mulan definitely has like a twist on that, but... for the most part, it was always kind of like the boy saving the day. And in this, you know, she is very well capable. And in Frozen, you know, Anna and Elsa are both quite capable. They don't need Kristoff or anything. And Moana is really like, I mean, you have Maui, played by The Rock, but Moana is the hero of that movie. So
Yeah,
this is
absolutely.
definitely a twist on that, and it kind of laid the groundwork for where all Disney has gone and over that time.
I love Frozen and I love Moana, but you're saying for your money, like if you're putting together a list of your favorite of the decade, you did, if you had to choose one,
I would go with
you gotta
Tangled,
take.
yeah.
That's cool, man. I should probably check it out because I pretty much love every Disney movie I see. Moving right along from the same year, we have The Town from Ben Affleck. I don't know, dude. I just thought that this movie fucking kicked ass, you know? Like it was it's a, like an epic crime fucking story, which you don't get too often. At least not like big ones that stand out, like Goodfellas or The Town. Just an awesome Boston movie about guys robbing banks. And, you know, Ben Affleck is good in it. Jeremy Renner's awesome in it. Like, it's just a kick-ass testosterone movie, I think. Like, you can't go wrong with The Town.
No, it's one of the best crime movies of the decade for sure, so.
And moving right along, we have Inception, which I gotta be honest. You added it to the list, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be there. I've seen it. I don't remember Inception. Like, I kind of remember it. It's almost like a fading dream, Chris.
I mean, I think we've talked over the years here that I am a huge fan of Christopher Nolan's work, outside of Batman, and I mean, you are too. Like, it's certainly not a,
Yeah, absolutely.
but Inception might be up there as my favorite of his. It's just this crazy science fiction story where they dive into someone's psyche and everything takes place in this dream state. So it's super, super realistic, but also magical and science, like special effects heavy in a way that is just mind blowing. It's a visual, it's amazingly well done visually. I think that the music is really solid. Leonardo DiCaprio is excellent in the movie. Ellen Page is kind of their director, also really great. And then it has that ending that,
I remember loving the ending, so
yeah, because
I
it's ambiguous, but and you can draw whatever conclusion you want from it, but I it's a movie that leaves you going, huh, like, and you want to talk about it. And that's something I think Nolan does so well. Whether you like the movie or not, you leave there wanting to talk about his films, and what just happened, and what are the implications of that, and you can extract so many different things from it. And I think for that reason alone, like, it's his stuff is almost always in discussion for me, for like best of.
Yeah, and I would say it's probably like the high water mark for him outside of Dark Knight trilogy. So at least that's what it feels like. Me personally, I just will always put the Dark Knight from 2008 above anything else he's done for whatever reason. I just love that movie.
I can definitely see that.
But you know, that's a different decade. So, all right, and in 2011, we have a movie I love and adore, and I love every time I watch it. Like I love it even more, and that is Drive from Nicholas Winding Refn. And I still remember seeing this in the theater. I remember like excitedly like texting you after I got out of the theater, saying like, "Holy shit, that movie is awesome!" You know, speaking of great, you know, soundtracks, the soundtrack for Drive is amazing. It's a fucking awesome, like stylish movie about a getaway driver who becomes a kind of entangled with a family that lives down the hall from him. And it goes violent, bloody, violent places. I don't know. I'm kind of gushing over, like, I fucking love Drive. And it's so funny, too, because it's not a super commercial film, but I think it delivers the goods. I just rewatched it last week, and I'm like, I remember this being slow, but by the time you're a half hour in, shit is hitting the fan. It's kind of like a, it's like a, like an action movie mixed with an art house film, but I think it totally works. I don't know how I feel about Nicholas Winding Refn, the director. I think he struck gold with this. I think he, but it's so weird because he has seemed to want to reject the success of Drive and go more in the art house direction, when I think he really found the right balance here, and he should not reject what is easily his best film, and he should try to find that vein again and go back in it, because the stuff he's done since, I mean, like, Only God Forgives, I think, is one of the worst movies I've seen in the last decade. So it's crazy that the swing he's had.
Yeah, and I've yet to see the Neon Demon, but like, visually he's a master. Like, I think even Only God Forgives is a beautifully shot movie, but it's terrible. Like, it's just so bad.
The Neon Demon looks great, but it's almost unwatchably boring. And it's weird because it's kind of a horror movie. And I'm just like, dude, this is dull. You're like thumbing your nose at your audience. Like, I don't know. If you want to see Neon Demon, it is on Prime, I noticed. So,
Maybe I will give it a go, but I have not been, I have not liked, I did not like Only God Forgives, and
no.
I did not hear good things about the Neon Demon, so.
I would say I liked the Neon Demon more than Only God Forgives, but yeah, like, he needs to accept the fact that Drive was amazing and try to replicate that, not go more in the art house direction. Just he struck a perfect balance with it, and yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you've seen Drive since it's come out, but that movie is, like I said, every time I watch it, I'm more impressed by it. We'll keep moving. Also from the same year, a movie that I remember you saw first, and you kind of told me I need to check out, this Korean film. I saw The Devil.
Which if I remember correctly, you ended up loving this film even more than I did. It is a beautiful, brutal, excellent crime, horror, drama, thriller, melding. It might be one of the, I think it might be the best Korean film I've ever seen, and I've seen some really good ones out of Korea. Like, they are at the top of some of the filmmaking international wise, but I Saw the Devil is just great. It's this movie, about this, like, serial killer, and there's revenge involved in it, and it's just so, so it's a great cat and mouse game that just kind of plays, and it's phenomenal. It is a brutal film, though. If you do not like brutality and excessive violence, this is not a movie that you should watch.
It's so cool though, because yes, it is, like you said, it's beautiful, but it's also nasty. And it, you don't, I can't think of many movies that are like, that movie's an epic. It's 2.5 hours long. It's almost operatic in its like emotions. But it's the premise is fucking blood simple. A detective takes some time off of work so he could go kill this fucking serial killer. And yeah, like you said, it's a cat and mouse game that keeps escalating. That movie's just nasty and it's nuts and it's beautiful. They've been talking for years about remaking I Saw the Devil for American audiences. I would say, even if you are not a person that loves foreign films, you almost don't even need the subtitles for this. You understand the basic premise, and these two are just chasing after each other for 2.5 hours. I actually gave it my film of the year that year, just above Drive, which is crazy. But they're both, I think, great. We have nothing for the next 2 years after that. Nothing for 2012 or 2013.
I didn't really realize that.
And looking through those years, I'm like, there's definitely good movies. There's great movies every year. But honestly, looking through those years, it kind of makes sense that we missed some. So moving along to 2014, I'll throw this out there, even though I personally consider this a 2015 movie. That's Adam Wingard's The Guest. I've gone on about this movie plenty here. You've seen The Guest, right?
Yes.
Tell us why The Guest is awesome. I know you didn't add this to the list, but...
It's basically The Terminator.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, there is definitely a little bit more to it than just like a Terminator knockoff. But once it gets going, it is that. It is just this brutal murder machine kind of destroying everything. But it starts out so weird, like with this guy showing up and he's kind of pretending to be, or you don't really realize that he's pretending to be, but he is, somebody that says he's like a friend of his, that their family, and they're like, oh, we don't really know who you are, but like our son died in the war. And
yeah, he's like a soldier buddy.
Yeah.
Who comes to visit this family of this guy who's died, and the family takes him in like, oh, we'd love to hear like stories about you two together. He starts like living with them kind of, and hanging out with the kids, and it's like Terminator mixed with something like The Stepfather, where there's like this person who's in your home who you think is like totally cool, and they're totally not cool. They're totally fucking insane.
Right. And like the sci-fi twist to it is pretty cool. And
yeah, it also has a killer soundtrack. It's totally an homage to the 80s in many ways. And yeah, it's just a blast to watch. It has a really fun ending. Yeah, I love The Guest. I mean, I've liked that and Your Next from Adam Wingard, but for me, it's The Guest by far. Also from 2014, Whiplash. You have not. I don't think you've ever.
I still haven't seen Whiplash. Yeah.
Yeah. You need to watch Whiplash, dude. It's fucking great. It's just a classic. It's a classic teacher and student movie, where it's just it's about a teacher who's trying to bring out the best in his student. But I think what makes it better than one of like many of those types of movies is how insane both the teacher and the student are, how hard he pushes the student to the point where it's almost like an abusive relationship, but there's almost like there's a method to the madness. It's up to you to decide in the end, but I think that's what makes it great. It's a movie about teaching, which is so like, if you know anyone's a teacher, well worth watching. But it's just one of those solid dramas where you really care about the basically two central characters in it. But they are just like on tilt. Like the performances from these guys are fucking like all time performances. Like I doubt what's his name, the kid in it. I can't remember his name now. Let me see. He was in that fucking.
Oh, yes. Miles Teller.
Miles Teller. He was in that fucking movie with, what's his name? Last year.
War Dog. Blank.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, War Dog. I don't think Miles Teller will ever give a better performance. J.K. Simmons is a great actor, but, I mean, this is him busting out everything he's got. It's Damien Chazelle, or I don't know. It's his first movie. You could go on to do La La Land. Yeah, Whiplash is well worth seeing. Chris, you have another Nolan pick that you added.
I do. And this is probably the most controversial of them. But Interstellar, I just straight up love this movie. I love the idea
Okay.
that like the Earth is gone to shit. It is. It's well on its way. And that we, to save humanity, we need to leave Earth, and that there is this plan by NASA, basically, or maybe it's like a worldwide, I think it's NASA, that is going to send a manned mission through a wormhole to find a new home for Earth. And casting is fantastic with it. Matthew McConaughey plays this pilot who ends up going on this mission. He leaves his family behind and to save them. Like he knows he'll probably never see them again, but he's doing this mission to save humanity, to hopefully save them as well. And then it gets really chirpy in the end where Cooper ends up in a black hole, and it all loops back to his daughter.
He's
And
inside of a fucking bookcase
yeah,
and
he's in this bookcase, trapped in time, where he is giving messages to his daughter. Who will eventually go on to be a scientist that works with NASA and will ultimately come up with the way for to save humanity and then get everybody off of Earth. It's like I think that ending is really what kind of like people like, what the fuck? I don't care.
it's a brain melter, dude. Like
It
it's
is.
hard to follow.
It totally is, but once again, it's a movie like that. You come out of it going, "What just happened?" Like it plays with time, it plays with science, which is something Nolan does so well. And once again, it's just one of the most beautiful looking films, of the decade. Like Nolan knows how to frame a shot. This movie looks amazing in IMAX, and it looks amazing wherever you watch it, but you watch it on the big screen with the big sound, and oh my God, it's so good. So
I mean, I liked it. I think it was a little bit tough to follow, but I have to give it credit for that because, like, that's cool. Like, you made a sci-fi movie, didn't shy away from like being about what it's like, really exploring the ideas in it, and.
yeah, like there's so many sci-fi films just take the easy way out and like, hey, we're gonna make this cliched, thing. And he goes weird with it, but I
He
kind of
goes
think it
all out.
works. Yeah.
Yeah, and despite the fact that it might be like I figured out what was going on, but despite the fact that it's hard to follow, it's hard for anyone to design it. There's a certain amount of heart to Interstellar that also propels it. Moving along to a movie with no heart that's ice cold. That is Gone Girl from 2014.
This was another one I
Yeah.
added on.
You know, I mean, dude, I totally respect putting Gone Girl on there. It is kind of the ultimate psycho woman movie. Like, holy crap. I'll let you speak on it though. Like,
Yeah,
I love the look of it. I love the music, but I think it's a good movie, but
I did not read the book before going in, so I went in blind. And it starts off as this movie where you aren't sure what's going on. Like, it doesn't seem like Ben Affleck's character would murder her. But then the way that Fincher kind of plays everything, it starts to look like maybe he's not this nice guy. Maybe he is this cold-blooded killer. And then it twists again, where we find out that she's not dead. And she has set this whole thing up to fuck him over. And then she ends up fucking over an ex who is like infatuated with her in an effort to fuck over Ben Affleck even more. Because the ending of this movie is brutal psychologically.
Yeah.
She has done all of this to trap Nick, Ben Affleck's character, in a way where he has no recourse to ever get out. He is locked in this twisted, fucked up relationship, and the whole thing is just so well done. Fincher is great with crime, and he just does such a great job here in portraying this whole psycho scenario. And when you get to it, like, you kind of feel bad for Nick at the end, like, holy shit, like the whole time she's been completely crazy, like from step one. It's not like you drove her crazy. She's always been a lunatic, and it may have always been her ultimate intention to trap you in such a way.
Yeah, I mean, a few things I'll say about it. Like, one, I think that Flynn, she's a great writer. I have not read Gone Girl, but I've read two of her other books. She, like, dude, she's one of the best writers working today, especially if you want dark stuff. Like, she's dark, dude, real dark. I think Trent Reznor's scorn in Gone Girl is pretty awesome. I think the scene where she murders the dude in the bed is horrifying. Like, it's fucking crazy. Like, as they're having sex. Yeah, I mean, dude, Gone Girl is, it's fucking nuts. And yeah, I totally can see why you added it to the list. In 2015, we got a whole bunch of fucking, whole bunch of shit.
Where
Let's
do you want
start
to
with
start?
It Follows. That's a movie, it's well documented that I love It Follows. I basically love it. I love it because it's a cool idea, for one. It's about this demon who gets passed along by people having sex, and he will come and kill you. And the only way to get rid of him is to have sex with someone else, and then he'll come after that person. That's a cool idea. It's very strong direction from, I think it was a first-time director, David Robert Mitchell. Yeah, I love the music in it, and I love how it's clearly kind of, the music makes it feel almost like an 80s film, but it also is playing clear homage to Halloween, especially in some of its final shots. Yeah, I love It Follows.
Yeah, it's one of the best horror films
Of recent
recently.
times,
So
yeah.
yeah, it's really well done. It has this artsy quality to it, and I don't love it quite as much as you do. I think the it gets a little goofy once they go to the school pool, but yeah, the whole thing
Yeah.
though is real, like, the idea of this shape that will always be chasing you is terrifying. And the way that it is transmitted is also terrifying. So, like, everything else about it, I think, works really well.
I just, every time I think about it too, I of course think of the music first, but then I think of its final shot, which just, again, the parallels between it and Halloween. I love the idea of at the end he's trying to get rid of this demon by having sex with prostitutes,
Yeah.
and he thinks that he's just like they he's distanced himself and far. Yeah, I think the climax is stupid, but I think the ending is great.
Oh, yeah.
He thinks he's distanced himself far enough from it that him and his girlfriend are safe now, and they're walking down the street together, like hand in hand. But way off in the background, you see a figure approaching. I love that. And then we'll move along to a movie I know that you love, which is Creed.
The spin-off, a sequel, semi-sequel to,
Reboot,
yeah,
something,
whatever you want to call
sequel.
it, I don't know. But it yeah, it's kind of a reboot of the Rocky franchise. starring Rocky.
Yeah.
It definitely takes place after Rocky Balboa, and it stars
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan as Apollo Creed's son, someone who he never knew, but he ultimately finds out that his dad was this famous boxer, and he goes seeking out Rocky Balboa, who was, you know, one of Apollo Creed's like closest friends and competitors in boxing, and he wants to be trained and he wants to box, and it's just a great like story of friendship and father-son relationship, even though Rocky and, you know, Adonis are not, they're not related, but they are in a way. Like,
yeah,
Rocky takes on Adonis as kind of like, you know, a surrogate son while he trains him, but also like Rocky needs somebody there for him. He is, his son is no longer in the picture and is kind of like left, and he's alone in South Philly running, you know, a restaurant, and he feels that he's alone and that there's nobody there. And Adonis being there gives him kind of life, and they both feed off of each other to make themselves better. And it's not just about boxing. Like, it's about people. And that's
no.
When the Rocky movies have been at their best is when they're about the people. So,
yeah, it's, I was going to make that point. Like, for my money, this is the best Rocky film since the first. Cause it, like you said, it's not about the big fight at the end. It's about the characters. I think that Sylvester Stallone got fucking robbed on that Oscar, dude. He's great in it. I don't even remember who the hell won, but I was very pissed when Stallone did not win Best Supporting Actor for that. Yeah, it's, and if you're a fan of Rocky movies and you haven't seen Creed, you need to see it. Like, it totally fits in. Like, yeah, we're calling it a reboot and this and that, but like, it doesn't discard anything that's happened in the series. In fact, like, you could tell it's made by someone who loves the series. And it acts as like kind of a true sequel, but kind of also passing the torch to a younger generation.
Right. Cause I mean, Stallone's old now. Like, I think he's in his 70s. Early, yeah, 70s.
I mean, it was ridiculous in the last movie when he was boxing. Yeah. So I think that what Ryan Coogler came up with to like reinvigorate this franchise is awesome. And I hope that he does Creed 2. I know they're making Creed 2. I don't know if he's attached to it. But
I know that Coogler is attached to the Black Panther movie.
Yeah, he's doing that.
Yeah, and I don't know what's coming for him after that, though.
A couple more films from 2015. Ex Machina. I don't know, it's super basic. Like, you know, we're making a robot. Is it human? Let's test to see if like it can pass as human. It goes pretty awesome places. It's not like Interstellar, where it's going to bend your brain trying to figure out what's going on, but it is a fun exploration of AI and what it means to be human. And you know, it's got a lot of discussion about the ideas in it, but then it just comes to this ending that is fucking awesome. I think, like, just really fun, like, great payoff. I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that about Ex Machina, but
no, I mean, it's a great sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
It's smart sci-fi, which is something we generally don't get a ton of. It's funny, we're going to talk about some smart sci-fi shortly, but, But it's something that, like, I mean, we have smart sci-fi on this list, but in general, a lot of like,
yeah,
is not like it's popcorn sci-fi. So
I think we're covering like all the important sci-fi of the last decade. This list, pretty much. Next up, probably my favorite Pixar movie, Inside Out.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it's one of the stronger emotional films that they've made. I think it appeals almost to adults more than kids at some point. Just a cool idea of, seeing inside someone's brain and how their brain works, and also some of the themes in it are very like for a kids' movie. They're tackling some stuff pretty head on in it. I don't know why Inside Out doesn't get more fucking love from people, honestly, but we both loved it.
It's we don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think like it is probably the perfect way that Pixar has approached that meld of adult concepts and children's visuals. In a way that, it is bright. It is a super bright movie, but it deals with some really hard topics, and you're dealing with Riley's emotions, and they really go into it. Like they break the emotions down into like five core characters, and they are like, I mean, it really comes down to joy and sadness, but it's this main concept of you can't have the happiness that you have without having some sadness tinged behind it. Like all of your emotions interlock together, and your best memories are because of all of that.
I mean, dude, for a kids movie, here's a concept in it that you have a happy memory from when you were a kid, but as you get older, feelings of sadness creep into that memory because it's the past. Like, that is pretty high concept for a kids movie. It's high concept for like an adult movie almost. I love Inside Out. 2016, if a couple.
We skipped one from 2015.
Did we? Oh yeah, a big one, a
Okay.
really big one.
We skipped Star Wars, The Force Awakens, real briefly. I mean, we've talked about Star Wars here a ton. It is exactly what we as Star Wars fans wanted,
At least
as
you and
a
I.
we as the
Some
movie
people,
dudes.
some people like I don't
There's
understand people
this
like.
weird backlash too now. Like
It's the same thing as the original. Okay,
well, there was
good.
that before, but like now there's like this weird backlash now that's like it's a bad movie. I'm like,
No, dude.
no, it's really good, and it's one of the best Star Wars movies ever made, and it introduces great new characters while staying true to the core themes of the original. So I am
Dude,
super excited for more.
I went out on a limb when we first saw it. I gave it. It was my film of the year. I think it was yours as well. I also said it's my favorite Star Wars film, and it still is. I think I love all the new characters, but it's also kind of like a payoff in a way to like see these characters that you haven't seen in like 30 years, being much older. There's just a built-in like nostalgia and sadness to it. And I also love Kylo Ren as a villain. I think he is more interesting than Darth Vader. Darth Vader in the original trilogy, for the most part, he's pretty pure evil. Like, he has his moments where you glimpse him to be something more. But what we have with Kylo Ren is just this bratty, whiny little bitch. I love it. Like, I think it's gonna be so much fun to see where it goes in
Yeah,
the next
what the
episode.
evolution of his character is going to be, because he's more nuanced. Like you're entirely right. Like the Emperor is always pure evil. There's no good to him at all. And Vader does not show that he has any good to him until halfway through, like Return of the Jedi, and maybe not even. Maybe it's not like the. Maybe it's the last third. It's when he finally talks to Luke on Endor. As they're going to the Emperor, like where you can see maybe there's a thought in Vader's head that he he believes
Yeah.
that.
And you just don't really know much about him. You know, he's his dad. You know, he turned to the dark side. And this is kind of like, yeah, it gets fleshed out by these pretty crummy prequels, but I'm saying if you just stick to like the core of the franchise, dude, for me, I love episode 7. It's my favorite. So
Yeah, it's really great.
in
2016.
yeah, we have well, I'll throw out my favorite movie, which I snuck on the list at the very end. Green Room. I think it's just a balls to the wall fucking horror thriller. That takes no prisoners. Anybody can die at any point. The violence is actually shocking. It's no bullshit. It respects its audience. Like it respects your intelligence. It doesn't over-explain things to you. It trusts that you'll figure it out. You have an awesome like villain in Patrick Stewart. You have the last role, or for me anyways, it's kind of the last role of Anton Yelchin.
Yelkin,
Yeah. It just like an awesome punk vibe to it. The movie almost felt like a harbinger of the era that we're now in, kind of warning us the Nazis were coming. And super simple premise. A band witnesses a murder in a club, and the Nazis that own slash run the club are trying to kill them so that they can't get out and tell the police what happened. I mean, it's fucking simple, but it was easily my favorite film from last year. I don't know if you wanted to add any more to what I had to say about Green Room, but I mean,
No,
that's how I feel
it's
about it.
great. It's I didn't love it as much as you did, but having rewatched it, it really does hold up to those values that you just kind of shot down, so.
We'll go right from my favorite film of 2016 to yours, Arrival.
Yeah, another super smart science fiction movie. Aliens have come to Earth, and we need to communicate with them. And
Yeah.
it's really a movie about language and learning and
Yeah.
ignorance and ultimately finding out what what language can do for us and how we can utilize that to come together as a society. And it is, I was blown away by it. It's, I think Amy Adams, I love her in just about everything she's in, but she really pulls this movie along with her. Jeremy Renner is great as her partner, and Forest Whitaker as kind of like the general kind of guy there. All give great performances, but it's really the aliens that I think are so fascinating. And that there's this time bend in the story, based on language, and
Yeah, but
like it's so great.
yeah, you kind of stole my thunder what I had to say about Arrival. I did not love it as much as you, but what I did really love about it is it was a sci-fi film about, as an English major, I have to appreciate this is a sci-fi film that's all about language and the power of language and how it colors, how it changes how you experience the world. That's pretty cool. Like, it's a sci-fi movie without any like explosions. It's just it's about aliens show up and we're trying to figure out how to talk to them, and in doing so, it changes us. I really, really like it. I totally got it. I just, for whatever reason, did not love it quite as much as you or some other people. For me, I'll take people's heads getting blown off in Green Room, but
That's fine.
I still really like Survival. One last film from 2016 that I just also really, really love is La La Land. We both liked it. It was really high on my list. I think it was number two. I've seen it twice. I'm happy I own it because I'm like itching to see it again. I've pretty much listened to the soundtrack nonstop since it came out. Like, I love the songs in it. It's just, I don't know, there's something magical about La La Land to me where, like, part of it was just that my viewing experience of it was like on a December night, we went on a date. We couldn't see it in our town, so we had to drive like 30 miles away to go see it. And we walk into this theater, and it is a packed house, and the crowd loved it. And it just added that magical feel to it, where like that kind of comes back when I watch it again. I don't know. I just fucking love La La Land. I do think it should have won Best Picture. I'm sorry, Moonlight. But yeah, that's. I don't know if you have anything to add to La La Land, but I just fucking love it all around.
Yeah, it's a great throwback to Hollywood musicals, but I think some people take the wrong message from it too. Like it's kind of about this guy's, you know, how he is stuck in the past and wants to preserve it. And if you got to take chances and you got to do new things to have a future,
and sometimes you have to sacrifice things for your future too. Like maybe the relationship, you know, spoilers,
the relationship that like you have are seemingly meant to have, but for you to get what you want in life, maybe you can't have everything.
Yeah, and just come on, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling—they're both adorable in it. They're fucking great. Like, there's chemistry between them.
So good.
Like, you like them as characters. You want to see them happy. Yeah, I just fucking love La La Land, dude. And we're gonna wrap it up with one final film from 2017. I thought about slipping my beloved Split or War for Planet of the Apes on here, but Chris, you chose Logan, and I totally respect that decision because that movie has grown on me since watching it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's we aren't done with 2017 yet, so there's definitely a chance for, and I mean maybe we revisit this conversation and you know, War for Planet of the Apes makes it on as well, but Logan is right now the movie that has stuck with me the most. It is the anti superhero movie. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, Deadpool is that movie, but Deadpool still kind of played within the bounds of what superhero movies were.
Deadpool also feels very throwaway to me compared to Logan. Like,
yeah,
Logan has weight, has gravitas to it. Like
there are, you know, superhero aspects to Logan because he has superpowers, but that's not what Logan is. Logan is just this movie about a father and a daughter and about a father and a son. It's about relationships and broken relationships and mending relationships, and it's all done through this kind of road trip. And it's so great.
It's like road trip / Western. Like, there's not been one movie this is what I'll give Logan. There's not been one movie this year that has had the emotional punch at the end that Logan has for me. Like, dude, I was a blubbering fucking mess at the end of that movie. And it's all just because of a simple little moment at the end where she says, Daddy. I'm like, no. You know?
Right.
It's fucking great. Like, it just does away with a lot of the bullshit that I'm so sick of, the formula of these superhero movies. This is not that. This is like, we're going to do an adult movie about this character. We're going to send him off in style.
And it's the, like, I mean, Hugh Jackman is playing a character he's played in a ton of movies at this point here, but this is the best performance that he's ever given as that character. And it's same with Patrick Stewart. Like, they both bring their history with those characters to the table here, but allow it to be so much more mature and nuanced than it has been in the other X-Men movies.
Yeah, so those are our picks for the best films of the 2010s. I'm sure we'll revisit it at some point if we make it to the end of the 2010s. I just wanted to throw out a few, like, honorable mentions I thought of after the fact that are also great films. The Apes trilogy. Wolf of Wall Street. Have you seen that?
I have. It's really good.
Django Unchained. And I know this is a little one that people like. This might just be me, but We Need to Talk About Kevin, I think, is very strong.
Sure.
I'm sure there's a ton of others that, you know, probably deserve mention, but we were kind of trying to keep it to, like, the big, big ones that, like, we thought really have staying power and have actually proven that they have staying power. So that's it. You know, if you haven't seen any of those, we strongly recommend all of them.
Yeah.
And if you have seen them, well, I hope this was a nice trip down memory lane. Starting next week, Chris, we begin our Halloween festivities. We're going all out for Halloween this year on Movie Dudes.
Yes, we are.
We will start our celebration of Halloween with a review of Stephen King's latest film, It.
Yeah.
Which I hear nothing but good stuff about. Well, almost nothing but good stuff about. And we will discuss our five favorite Stephen King movies. You'll come with a list of your five. I'm coming with my five. We've left it with no rules to the list. I don't care, Chris, if you want to put Children of the Corn 5 on there, even though he didn't write Children of the Corn 5. I don't care if it's a miniseries. I don't care if it's a TV show. It doesn't have to be horror. So I expect that there will be at least a little bit of diversity between our two lists. I have mine made already. It was real tough.
Yeah, so I started making mine today, and we're going to definitely talk about this next week, but so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But I feel that I may already revise it. Like, it's like, yeah, like the, like I started out with, like, what are the five best Stephen King movies? And then I was like, but I really like this one. Like, I think I would put it over this one, even though I think that one's a better movie. Like,
I mean, I had a lot of fun thinking about it. Like, I kind of went through some of the process you were describing, and then also just going, like, man, I think, like, this super big one that everyone loves as their favorite isn't going to make my list because I don't have room for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun to talk about. I think that some of mine are boring picks, but, I mean, I'm just being honest on what I think are the best. So that will be next week, a big Stephen King episode, full review of It. And then following that, we're going to try to do two a week, the entire Friday the 13th series, spoiler-filled discussions. Like, we're planning, at least this is my plan, we'll spend our whole episode talking two movies. Of course, if there is a big movie that comes out in theaters or something like that, we will also discuss in the coming weeks. But really want to let our discussion of Friday the 13th breathe and have time to talk about each film that we see.
These are probably going to be episodes that are all over an hour long. So,
yeah. And, you know, like I said, like, Gerald's Game is going to come out this month. Of course, we'll review that. But for the most part, you can expect after that, just every week through Halloween, we're going through Friday the 13th. So I hope everyone is excited about it as I am. I think it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun. So.
So, yeah, thanks for listening. Come back next week. Halloween's about to kick off, y'all.
Movie Dudes! Do-do-do-do!